Welcome to When Your Health Matters. Your host is Dr. Richard Huntoon of Advanced Alternative Medicine Center, located right here in the Hudson Valley in Newburgh. Dr. Huntoon has been practicing alternative health, utilizing chiropractic and many other alternative health techniques for the past 27 years to support you when your health matters. It's his intention to offer practical advice every week for you to consider and apply in your own life to make your life and the lives of your family and friends healthier and happier. And when you have questions, he'll give you resources to get your health-related questions answered from Doc Rick himself or another expert from the show. Being empowered to make positive health choices before a problem arises is the best way to approach health. And he promises to have information for you every week that will allow you to become proactive and empowered to take control of your health and your life. Doc Rick is grateful you're tuned in today, and your journey will begin after our first commercial break from our generous sponsor.
You are listening to the Alternative Healthcare Network.
This is Bruce Bagan from B&B Pool and Spa Center. We're proud sponsors of When Your Health Matters. Please appreciate that as a pool and spa builder, we are committed to making sure that you can get the most health benefits from owning your own hot water spa. And that's why we carry a full line of Sundance Spas, the world's leading manufacturer of hydrotherapy spas. Relaxation is one of the best ways to take care of your health. And when you own your own Sundance Spa, you can unwind at home every day in the privacy and comfort of your own home. Each Sundance Spa has dozens of precisely placed water jets that pamper you with their massaging bubbles. B&B Pool and Spa Center carries a full line of Sundance spas and is a factory-authorized warranty center. Come to B&B. You'll be amazed at how easy we make it to have your own personal hydrotherapy spa. We'll handle everything for you, so just sit back and relax. Visit the water professionals at B&B Pool and Spa Center, where we've been helping customers relax and enjoy their water since 1972. 787 Chestnut Ridge Road in Chestnut Ridge and on the web at bbpoolandspa.com or call 888-706-4557. That's bbpoolandspa.com or 888-706-4557.
You are listening to the Alternative Healthcare Network.
Welcome to this week's show, When Your Health Matters, the show designed to empower you to better health through knowledge and education. And I'm your host, Dr. Richard Huntoon from Advanced Alternative Medicine Center. We are located at 138 Canal Street in Pooler Park, that is in Pooler, Georgia. We're in Suite 404 of Building 400. So if you have a health issue and you want to get it addressed in a natural, non-drug, non-medicinal way, I would suggest that you come by the office, again, at 138 Canal Street in Pooler Park. If you want to call me ahead of time, you can always do that. I would be happy to receive your call. My phone number for my cell phone, which is the one I carry with me, is 845-561-2225. Again, 845-561-2225. Please do not text that phone because it does not receive texts, and I'll never know that you sent me a text, and I will never respond to your text. But if texting is important for you and you want to communicate that way, you can send me an email to my email address, which is docrick, D-O-C-R-I-C-K, docrick at spineboy.com. As I said, it would be my pleasure to help you to better understanding what the concerns that you have. I find it fascinating that we as a nation comprise 4.5% of the world's population. We consume 92% of the world's medication, and yet we rank 59th in the world as far as our health goes. And just looking at all those statistics and being baffled by them, it basically says that the health of our country is anything but healthy. And I personally am offended by that, and this is why we do the show called When Your Health Matters. It's not up to me when your health matters. It's up to you when your health matters. And so if your health does matter, and I feel that it should, it's our most important asset, and you have a health issue and you're not getting the satisfaction from your medical doctor because they're just giving you more and more prescriptions or trying to set you up for failure so that you get to have surgery, if you want to get away from that, if you want to get off that treadmill of treatment, you should give me a call, and I would be happy to receive your call. And so today we want to talk about probably one of the most important things that you can do. It's about your state of mind. So much in our society keeps us in a state of panic or a state of fear or a state of anger. And those are things that contribute to our state of health. And so we want to talk today about our healing state of mind. And we are lucky enough and blessed enough to have Mark's cohort, the man that owns the company that Mark works for. His name is Marshall Mermel. He started with me probably 14 or 15 years ago when this show started, but he's a busy man. He literally conducts business all over the world. He's helping to change our planet by introducing technology that's going to get rid of all of our wastes and allow for clean air and clean environment and all of those wonderful things that we need to do to save our planet. But he happens to be in studio with me for the third week in a row, and it's just absolutely such a blessing. So we want to say welcome, Marshall, and welcome to When Your Health Matters.
Thank you, Doc Rick. It's a real pleasure to be here, and thank you for having me on the show to explore how people can heal their state of mind. First question that comes to my mind is, how big a role does one's attitude have on one's health?
Well, Marshall, attitude is everything, not just for your health, but for all of your life. The attitude you bring to life is the experience you're going to have in life. Positive health attitude, positive health experience. And it may take some time if you're starting out with a health concern and that you would now choose to change. But the first thing that you need to do is change your perspective and change your attitude about your health issue and start looking positively at where you're going to be going. Thing that I shared it probably with four or five patients already this morning is you need to be in your outcome. You need to focus on the outcome. If you're looking for a positive change in your life, then start imagining what it would feel like and what you would be doing in that state of mind and if you were having that experience. So if you wanted to have $1 million in a bank account, start to feel the way that you would feel if you had $1 million in your bank account. And certainly having $1 million is a very big number. So it may take a little while to manifest that, but get on the path and you'll be on your way.
That's very interesting, Doc. I'm sure there are a lot of listeners out there who are open to this message. That's why they're listening to this show. But a lot of people, I think, even listeners that are open to this show, are probably wondering, how does physical health relate? And is it fair to say that most physical health issues are related to your state of mind?
Well, all state of mind influences your physical health. So I'm going to say that all physical health ailments start in the mind. Choices that you make based upon your state of mind, the things that you're willing to accept, things that you're willing to do, those all stem from your state of mind. And let's say you're a contractor construction type person and you've put yourself in a position to where you're going to be a jackhammer operator all day long every day.
Yeah.
And that's what brings you joy, or that's what pays the bills, or that's what you're choosing to do, and that's your role in life.
Right.
Well, operating a jackhammer all day, every day is going to create a certain amount of stress in your shoulders and in your body. And you may have to deal with the effects of doing that for 10, 20, 30, 40 years, depending upon, I don't know what the life expectancy is of a jackhammer operator, but you know, you see them on the side of the road, or you see them in cities, or you see them on construction sites, and you know, my perspective has always been that's a lot of a wear and tear and abuse on the body, and that person's going to have to deal with the consequences of doing that all day, every day, as they continue to age.
That's really informative, Doc. How much of your practice is devoted to the mental aspects of health?
Well, I help people as triune beings. That's the body, that's the mind, and that's the spirit. So the mental part is a big piece of the puzzle, and it ties directly to the physical. And spirit is in charge of all of it, which is why we have to help a person get whole. Body, mind, and spirit.
So I think it's reasonable to ask if I am one of your patients and I know how you feel about it, but many of the listeners may not know this. How big is the relationship between your beliefs and your health?
Well, as I've said, Marshall, it's everything. You were given your beliefs before you had anything else. You were given your beliefs by your parents who modeled behavior for you that you choose to accept and mimic, or possibly you went the other way and violated their behavior, you were still influenced by what you saw when you grew up. And eventually, your beliefs become the foundation for your experience in life, whether it's good or bad.
So can we use our beliefs to influence better health outcomes?
Oh, always. But you have to do the thing that's most important is you have to practice. And practice makes perfect. And if you're practicing good health attitudes and good health practices, then you'll experience good health outcomes. If you're practicing bad health attitudes and bad health experiences, then you're going to have bad health outcomes. It was interesting. When I was coming into the studio this morning, I noticed that there was a gentleman that was standing outside of the building. Good for him that he was standing outside of the building. He was smoking a cigarette. And I'm pretty sure that he wasn't conscious of the damage that he's creating to himself. He probably had a whole bunch of mental minutiae going on in his head, and he was outside having a cigarette because he needed a break from whatever he was doing at his desk or whatever his workstation was. And so he took a break because the stress had accumulated. And this is the part that I really don't understand, and I was hoping that maybe a smoker at some point could explain it to me, that taking a drag of a cigarette stimulates the body. And if you're stimulating the body, that's kind of counterproductive to relaxing, because relaxation is without stimulus to the body. Yet smokers will claim that they feel relaxed when they're smoking, when in fact, physiologically, it would be absolutely impossible for them to be relaxing while they're smoking.
Good point, Doc.
But, you know, he was outside and he was having his cigarette, and you know, that's his outlet for dealing with what it is that he's dealing with. But I don't know that he was consciously aware of the effect that it's going to have on his body over time, because in his mind, he probably thinks that it's a stress reliever.
Right. And is, I think one of the things that comes to mind is the difference between our conscious behavior and our subconscious behavior. So here's a thought. Can you really change your subconscious beliefs by using conscious discipline?
Subconscious beliefs by using conscious discipline. Absolutely. If you're consistent and direct with your behavior, you have to be present with what's going on, and you have to be deliberate in the actions that you're taking. And so if you are consciously doing your life, your subconscious beliefs will come to the surface, and then you can consciously change them. You know, when somebody chooses to no longer, quote, be a smoker, or no longer be a sugar person,
right,
or no longer drink alcohol, they're consciously choosing to avoid maybe that addiction that they used to have. You know, an alcoholic will always be an alcoholic. They just choose to abstain from alcohol.
Right.
But if they open the door and allow alcohol in again, they're going to reactivate their alcoholism. So you have to be conscious in order to control what's going on unconsciously or subconsciously.
So when the patterns of thinking are so ingrained, as you just described, how do you go about changing them?
Well, it's going to be one step at a time, Marshall. It's always going to be one step at a time, and it has to be deliberate and it has to be conscious.
Well, is there a step-by-step process that you recommend?
No. What do you think?
I think so, but I don't know if the listeners don't know.
Right. So you need to... There's definitely a step-by-step process. I don't know that this is the right form to get into that step-to-step process, but you need to fill your conscious mind with positive thoughts, as they will filter down through the subconscious and they will help you to make better choices based on those positive thoughts, as they will then become the dominant thought process. And the great news, Marshall, is it supports itself and it gets bigger and easier to do as you go forward.
Well, as you know, Doc Rick, I'm an adherent of positive thinking myself. My whole life has been ingrained in that. I was raised that way. However, I think a lot of listeners find it hard to believe that it's all about positive thinking. I've run into people like that. How does one train their subconscious?
Again, it's just about continually putting in the positive thoughts and be conscious of what it is that you're doing. And as I said, as you continue to be deliberately conscious about what you're doing and the choices that you're making and really analyzing things before you take action, it's literally you need to slow down and think twice. Your initial thought process is going to be a reaction.
Right.
That's coming out of your subconscious or your unconscious mind, because that's how you've trained your nervous system to respond.
Right.
Okay. So if you look at it and say, you know, I don't want to do that same thing again because that's what I'm trying to avoid or get away from. So I'm going to deliberately make a new choice, a conscious choice, to not repeat the old patterns that's coming out of my subconscious. I'm going to make a new choice consciously. And as you continually make the new choice, you will start to ingrain neurological pathways within your mind that will help to make that new choice your default choice, and it will replace the old default of the poor behavior.
Well, I think I know that to be true, but I think a lot of our listeners are probably wondering, how do you go about making positive affirmations effective? In other words, reinforced and deployed?
Well, you have to believe them to start out with. If you're mm-hmm. going to make a positive affirmation, you need to believe that the positive affirmation is going to serve you in the right way. And then you need to repeat them and take action based upon them, so that you can then experience them to be true. And as you start to do that, and you start to do that more often, and you keep reinforcing, like I said, you're laying down new neurological pathways within your mind, and then that becomes the dominant behavior. The default pattern for you is this new positive pattern, as opposed to the old unconscious negative pattern.
So describing laying down these patterns, does it take a long time to make these attitudinal shifts?
It will take some time, and the more consistent you are with it, the more conscious you are of it, the more you choose to go about reinforcing it, the faster that it will take, and the more benefit, and the quicker the change will show up.
Well, I'm going to go back to that point that you made about people who have an alcoholic syndrome, where they take a 12-step process and they're out of it. Are the changes permanent, or can you slip back to old ways?
Well, again, that depends on you being consistent, because our patterning is so ingrained in us, and because it's been there your whole life. If you start at age 50, you have 50 years of a habit to change. Can you see how that might take a while?
Sure.
But it is possible, a little at a time, with consistency for sure. And I see it every day in my practice, and every day in terms of the choices that my practice members make.
Right. So do some of the beliefs that one has come from their earliest years of life, like before they were verbal, like when you were a baby?
Well, all of them actually start there, because when you're sitting in your quote crib or your bassinet or your little chair, and you're just looking at the world outside of you, and there's not really a lot going on until your mom or your dad comes over and maybe feeds you or changes you or picks you up and carries you around or whatever. Basically, you're just at that stage of our lives, we're just receivers. We're trying to train our receptive organs, our eyes, our nose, our ears, our sense of taste, our sense of touch, those five main senses. We're actually trying to gain input by interacting with our environment, but we don't necessarily know where it comes from, because we don't have enough understanding at that particular point in our development. So mom continues to bring us food in a consistent pattern. I don't know, it starts to develop into the same time every day, even though I'm not really conscious of time, but it seems to be that this is the time of day that this happens. This is the time of day that I get changed. This is the time of day that she puts me down to go to sleep. I'm initially not on board with all of it, so maybe I cry and roll around, and I don't know. She just changed my diaper, and that may stimulate me to soil it again. And, it's like these are the things that mom and dad get to deal with while I'm trying to figure out how to navigate my environment. But over time, through watching my parents and watching anybody who's, comes into my environment and allows me to see their behavior, it starts to lay down impressions within my mind that helps to set me up for repeating the patterns that I'm seeing. And that's how we learn. But it's all done on, we don't know what the purpose of doing things this way is. We don't know if there's a better way to do it. We don't know if there's a less better way to do it. We're just doing it because we've already seen it done, and we're modeling ourselves after it. And what's nice now is that if you take the time to ask children who are probably below the age of 7, who haven't lost all of their own creativity, I make it a conscious effort to ask them, before telling them what to do, I ask them what they think they should do, because I want to know how they think, and maybe they'll bring a new perspective to the table that's more efficient than what my patterning trained me to do. And so I find it interesting that as we look at our environment, and I think it's safe to say that everybody would agree that time is speeding up, if you will, we need more things of efficiency. That's why you're doing the stuff that you're doing, in an effort to get rid of big problems in a more efficient manner without a lot of waste and a lot of pollution. And I think a lot of these young minds and newly developed minds and minds that are being developed bring a new perspective to the table, unless they've already been trained to think the way we want them to think. Now, big government wants everybody to think the same way and do things the same way. But I was having a conversation with a young lady in the Department of Motor Vehicles, and we were talking about the lack of free thinking that goes on in our society anymore. No, we need free thinkers. We need new ideas. We need ways to innovate and change what's going on in society, because society's not moving in the way that we should have it move. We don't honor the golden rule of do unto others and be, the way you'd want them to do unto you, kind of thing. So, and it all goes back to, well, what is the patterning that we grew up with and the unconscious?
Well, that's a really fascinating description, and I think a lot of people will agree with you that they think of themselves as normal people. They think back to their childhood, and they see these things that we all take as quote-unquote normal behavior. But let's think about something else, and that is, obviously, not everybody is 100% normal. Nobody is, but there are some people that are traumatized in life by a lot of things. It could be the environment. It could be personal relationships. So how can you change things that come about due to trauma?
Well, you got to work with them. And the people who have the post-traumatic stress disorder and those things that you know, we're all consciously aware of because we've made it a conscious understanding that, you know, people come back from traumatic events and they get PTSD or post-traumatic stress disorder. You need to work with someone who can remove the trauma from the memory and allow you to see the memory for what it is, free of the emotional trauma and just something that you experienced without the scar still attached. It's a way of unwinding the traumatic effect associated with a memory. It's like, okay, so yeah, I have a scar on the back of my hand because I got some boiling water that hit my hand when I was a kid. That's a memory that I can look at when I see the scar, but I don't go back there in my mind and experience the trauma associated with that anymore. Why? Because I've transformed that trauma out of the scar. And here's truth be told. If you get the emotional trauma out of a scar, the scar can actually heal and a lot of times disappears.
Wow. In this conversation about healing the state of mind, we've talked, and you and I have had conversations about these issues and how people are physically healed through a state of mind. And I've also heard you talk about the placebo effect, but there's also the nocebo effect that I don't think most people have heard of. What are they and how do they work?
Well, the placebo effect is a beneficial effect produced by the placebo drugs or the treatment, which cannot be attributed to the properties of the placebo itself and therefore must be due to the patient's belief within the treatment. Now, a nocebo effect is one that sponsors harm rather than benefit. So nocebo effect is associated with a person's prior expectations of adverse effects from treatments as well as with the conditioning itself. So we always want to use a placebo effect. We don't necessarily want to highlight somebody's nocebo effect. And so that's kind of the difference between those two. And so what's important for us is, as listeners, we need to take a short commercial break. We're talking about a healing state of mind today on When Your Health Matters. Keep sticking with us because we're going to get into some more things about how your state of mind affects your health and how you can employ a healing state of mind. But listen to this commercial and we'll be right back.
You are listening to the Alternative Healthcare Network.
You've been going to the doctor for years. They order you blood work, give you a pill to cover up your symptom, and send you on your way. The side effects to that medication could not only be dangerous, but life-threatening, and what you don't know can kill you. I'm Dr. Richard Huntoon of the Advanced Alternative Medicine Center. For all the latest on improving your health, I'm here to answer any questions and helping you towards a healthier life. Call Advanced Alternative Medicine Center at 561-2225 or go to spineboy.com.
You are listening to the Alternative Healthcare Network.
And we are back, and you're listening to When Your Health Matters, the show designed to empower you to better health through knowledge and education. And I'm your host, Dr. Richard Huntoon from Advanced Alternative Medicine Center. We're located at 138 Canal Street in Pooler Park. That is in Pooler, Georgia. We're in Suite 404 of Building 400. If you want to get a hold of me short of walking into the office, which is always okay, please walk into the office and say hello. But if you want to say hello and ask me a question, you can always call my cell phone. My cell phone is always with me, so you can call me at area code 845-561-2225, again, 845-561-2225, or you can email me directly at docrick@spineboy.com. If you do like to do the texting thing, please send me an email because my phone does not receive texts, so I will never respond to you because I will never receive it. But you can email me at docrick@spineboy.com. Again, that's docrick@spineboy.com. And it would be my pleasure to help you to better understanding what the concerns that you have regarding your health. Now, Marshall and I have been talking about a healing state of mind and how the state of mind influences our behavior and all of that, and I'm sure you have more questions.
I do. Doc, one of the major areas our minds impact our health is turning our eating habits around. Isn't that kind of how you got into being a healthcare professional?
Well, actually it is, Marshall. I gained 33 pounds my first 8 weeks of college. And when I came home for Thanksgiving break, I walked into the house, and my mom hadn't seen me in 10 weeks. And I walked up the stairs and into the kitchen, and she turned around, and she looked at me, and the first words out of her mouth, Marshall, "My God, Rick, you're fat."
Ooh.
Now, I have never been fat, ever in my life. And so to hear that out of my mom's mouth was actually devastating to me. It truly scarred me. But it scarred me in a good way, because I went back to school, and when I wasn't studying pre-med, I was in the library studying nutrition and learning about food. And I was basically learning how food affects the body, how the food choices affect the body, and what food is and what we need to do as far as eating food in order to get rid of the excess weight that I had. And I taught myself about nutrition, and I taught myself how to lose weight. And losing weight is not a problem at all. It's just you need to have the right understanding. The challenge that we have with most of the diet programs out there is the fact that they don't teach the right understanding. They just try to sell you their food, or they try to sell you their eating program. And at the end of the day, if you give people the understanding of what food is, what proteins are, what fats are, what carbohydrates are, what the calories are, and instead of counting calories, if you set the body up to burn calories, then you don't ever have to worry about it, and you can lose weight and eat whatever the heck you want.
I understand that, Doc, but I think a lot of people are faced with that challenge. Since you discovered in your own experience that food is an essential basis for good health, how do you help people change their attitude about eating?
Well, everyone's different, Marshall, and we do it on a person-by-person basis. But suffice to say, we look at their food diary, look at their moods while eating, and we begin to put together their belief system associated with food. Some see food as a reward. Some see food as a punishment. So we need to determine where the person comes from, where on that scale they are, and when it comes to their food, what their attitude is towards their food. And based upon that, we can help to unwind the negative patterning that they have in their subconscious, and we can give them a different relationship with food, one that's going to be health beneficial, not necessarily disease growing results from the food that they're eating.
So when people eat, shouldn't it simply be to satisfy one's hunger?
Well, not all the time. Sometimes food should be about the company that you're with, the experience you're having, and the memories that you're creating. Grandma's health on Thanksgiving is a great example. The smells when walking into the house for the initial time. All those smells create an emotional experience around the food, and you haven't even sat down to eat the food yet, but it's the whole experience. You know, the quickest way to access somebody's subconscious mind is actually through their sense of smell.
Right.
And so the sense of smell evokes emotional memories. And so we have patterns around different holidays and different celebrations that are associated with the smells of the food that's being made. And it's like, okay, everybody's willing to gather around high quality food, even if the food isn't high quality. They think they're going to have a good experience and celebration, or just getting together with family and friends, etc. You know, everybody can rally around that. And sometimes you're rallying around the dessert tray.
Right. So, you know, we just had a holiday, and a lot of food is central to that holiday. And I think a lot of people just feel the ambiance of being in that, you know, holiday setting. What about eating for pleasure?
Well, that's totally fine, but make sure that the pleasure part of it is the state that you are in and not the state that you're looking to achieve. Because at that point, the food you're reaching for was based in a negativity, and that will create bad choices going forward and associated with sponsoring thoughts. So if you're going to be eating for pleasure, you want to make sure that the pleasure is truly pleasurable, not, for instance, on a Friday night, you don't have anybody to go hang out with, and so you're kind of in a depressed mood, and so you go to the refrigerator and you grab some what I call the crap foods, the completely refined and processed foods. Maybe you get it out of the freezer and you plow through a half a gallon of ice cream just simply because it starts to make you feel better about the fact that you're depressed over not having anybody to hang out with. And so now you have a negative association with the food that you ate. So every time you eat that food, it's going to re-stimulate the negative state of mind that you were in. And now you could potentially set yourself up with food allergies as a result.
Right. And a lot of this crap food, as you describe it, is completely unrefined food. So much of it is available. It's not good for our health. So how do you tell people to go about avoiding it?
Well, you choose to be healthy and reinforce it every time that you're near food. I gave up dessert almost 3 years ago next month and put into a situation where it is around me and is offered to me, and I have the courage and the strength to say no, and it's my choice, and I benefit from that choice. Why? Because that's the choice that I'm making, because I know if I eat something that isn't ideal for me, I know I'm going to have to feel the results of having eaten that food at least for the next half of a day. And if it's the last meal of my day, then I'm going to feel it first thing in the morning. Now, I'm conscious of that because I've trained my body to be that sensitive to what's what. But I had to train it to be that way. Way back in college when, like I mentioned earlier, when I put on 33 pounds the first 8 weeks of school, I was eating unconsciously. We would go to the cafeteria at 4:30 and we would eat for 3 hours because we could. And we'd have as many desserts as we wanted. And we'd have as many burgers as we wanted or hot dogs or pizza or serving of Jell-O or whatever it is that we wanted. And we would, and of course, you can't possibly burn all those calories, so put on a lot of weight. And so I had to retrain myself and be disciplined and be committed to the outcome that I was trying to create, which was to be healthy. And so you have to make that commitment.
That's definitely a state of mind. It's a definite mindfulness and consciousness that I know that I've acquired from you to be able to actually go from 235 pounds down to 180 or 170.
Right.
There's so much advancement in the world of fine dining. I travel, as you said, all around the world on this quest to improve our lives through taking waste and turning it into something beneficial. When you talk about fine dining, however, many chefs are coming to the profession today, and they're bringing new creativity as well as healthier awareness to their restaurants. Is the idea of local food beneficial?
Oh, local food is always beneficial because the environment that you live in supports the microbiome within side of you and outside of you. So we live in an ecosystem, okay? And that ecosystem, if you're outside of a major metropolitan area, which we are, versus somewhere out in rural America, has a completely different ecosystem. That ecosystem is going to find its way into the food chain, and it's going to reflect in terms of how your body expresses the influence from that ecosystem associated with the food chain. And so the microbiome is important, and the influences of our local environment definitely influences our health. And so if you can tap into the positive aspects of what's in our environment food-wise, then you can have positive health outcomes, and I don't care where in the world you live.
Yeah, I totally agree with you. I was recently on a business trip to the UK and to Malta, and I noticed that the portions there are much smaller than what we get in America. But more important, I saw that they were eating differently than we do in America, not just by portions, but should one consider eating according to the seasons? That's what I got from being overseas.
Well, if you have the seasonal food as a choice, absolutely yes. The difficulty is, you know, there's some parts of our country, there's some parts of our planet to where you don't really get a lot of seasons. It's just the time of year, you know, you go down by the equator and their season is hot.
Yeah, right.
And, you know, they don't get any change in the season. They don't get a fall, you know. It's like we experience fall differently in Georgia than we do in New York.
Correct.
And it's nice to come up to New York and see the leaves changing and the colors of fall, et cetera. But we really don't get a lot of that down in the state of Georgia. But we do experience the seasons. And so, you know, in the fall when you get the harvest time and it's time to harvest all those crops that have been growing it's important for us to partake in them.
Well, one of the things about our food chain in the United States is that we import a lot of food from, you know, what's called the breadbasket, like Kansas, California, when it's out of season here in either Georgia or New York. Is it good to continue to enjoy all the imported fruits and vegetables year-round?
If they're available. It's interesting. My wife and I went on a cruise, and we went to Costa Rica, and we went on a ziplining adventure about 2 hours into the country. And so we had to take a bus ride in to Costa Rica from the port. And for basically about 100 of those 2 hour drive, 100 miles of that 2 hour drive on the right side of the bus headed out of the port were banana mangroves. Mm. And they were just, you know, and that was for, I believe the company was Dole. And so they make bananas, and what do? They harvest them when they're green, and they put them in the crates, and the crates are then loaded onto a truck, and the truck goes to the port, and then the port puts them on a ship, and the ship brings them up to Savannah, and then they unload them and put them on box trucks to bring them to the store. They put them out, and guess what color those bananas still are when they get to the store?
Green.
They're still green. Yeah. Why? Because they haven't fully matured.
Right.
Okay, and then we bring them home, and if you're smart, you separate your bananas so that they're not all in the same stem. They're all individualized, and then they will slowly ripen over the next couple of days, and you want to eat them when they're ripe. But the problem is that they stopped getting their nutrition the moment they took them off the tree, and it's been about 3-4 weeks until you actually get them. So what's happening to that fruit actually over time? It's slowly spoiling.
Right.
But it's going from being immature to being what we would call mature, but I don't know that it has the same nutritional content that it would have had it been left on the vine to fully mature, and then you pick it and eat it at that particular point. I have a lot of patients that come from Central America, and I appreciate them tremendously, and I'll ask them about their childhood growing up, and you know, they didn't have to go to the store to eat. They'd go to their backyard, and they'd just pull something off the tree, and it would be fresh. And I'm like, and how does that compare to what you get here? Oh, it's terrible here. It's like, yeah, because guess what? It's gone through a four-week process of being transferred up here, and it was picked before it was actually ripe.
Right. So how does one go about making the adjustments to change our diet?
Basically, it's one meal at a time and within the things that you choose to eat each meal, avoiding the pastas and having everything else, avoiding the potato and having other vegetables to substitute for that potato. But you have to make those adjustments yourself, and you need to get an education, and you need to have the understanding of why it's important to make those changes. Stay away from the potatoes. Why? Because they're just basically wasted empty calories. You know, stay away from the pasta. Pasta is got so much refined sugar in it. There's 46 grams of sugar for every ounce of pasta, and nobody ever eats an ounce of pasta. They eat several ounces of pasta. So you're getting 46 times however many ounces of pasta that you're eating, and you're never, ever going to burn that much sugar. So it ends up being stored as fat and creates health issues.
So does it need to be a gradual process in order to change our habits?
Well, for most, the answer is yes, but my mom quit smoking just once and has been successful for over 30 years, and it took at least 6 months before anybody in our family noticed that she'd quit. And so it's like, you know, there are people who can just say that, you know what, that's no longer me, and never pick it up ever again. That's essentially what I did with dessert. I decided that, you know what, today's my last day of eating dessert. I will never eat dessert again. And so far, for coming up on 3 years, that's been my truth.
And since weight loss is so much a part of what people want, is there a way to change our weight without going hungry?
Oh, absolutely. In fact, I teach people how to eat more and lose weight. They're never hungry. But they're not packing on pounds. Why? Because of the choices of food that they're eating. If you eat real food, your body's going to burn it. It doesn't have anything to store. But if you eat the completely refined and processed food that's empty in calories and has no nutritional to it, your body's going to look at that and say, you know what? This doesn't have everything we need in order to burn it. So we're going to store it until we have the rest of the components that would then allow us to burn that food for fuel. The challenge is they've refined all of those components out of our food, because that's what the good Food and Drug Administration allows. And so everybody's going to be packing on pounds. Why? Because they're eating the completely refined and processed food that doesn't have any nutritional value to it.
So it seems to me that I think we're connecting some dots here. What you just said, I think, also connects to emotional issues. So how can one recognize if one's an emotional eater?
Well, you got to pay attention and check in with how you're feeling when you're reaching for food. And that's why in my diet history, we ask you, well, what's your mood while eating? Because if you're in a particular mood, we've talked about it many times, if you have low self-esteem, that's going to activate your sense of taste, and 80% of your taste buds are devoted towards sweetness. So when you feel bad about yourself and you're caving yourself in, there's a greater than 80% chance you're going to reach for something that has no nutritional value at all, simply because it's going to stimulate and satisfy your sense of taste. And in this case, it's going to be something sweet, which really doesn't have any value.
Well, you indicated low self-esteem. What are the kinds of emotional issues can cause someone to eat that way?
Feeling disgusted, low self-esteem, low sense of self-worth, somebody who's indecisive. I don't know. There's a whole bunch of different emotions. I don't know why I can't think of any of them right now. But it's suffice to say that when one doesn't feel good about themselves, when one feels grief, sadness, when one feels, you know, anger, frustration, resentment, when one feels a sense of fear, when one feels, as we've said, low self-esteem, you're going to be in a negative headspace, and you're going to want to do something naturally that's going to boost things in the right direction. Okay,
right.
And that's tied to your sense of taste. But again, the predominant sense of taste that we have is a taste of sweetness. Mm. And so you're going to reach for something that tastes sweet. But anything that tastes sweet typically is a man-made, completely refined and processed ingredient that has no nutritional value whatsoever. And so, believe it or not, pasta is one of the most sweet things out there. Bread is one of the most sweet things out there. Mm. But people don't see it and don't experience it that way. I would ask the listener to do a very interesting experiment. Go get a piece of white bread
Right.
Crumple it up into a ball. Mm. Put a piece of that ball into your mouth. Don't chew it. Just let it sit in your mouth. And as the enzymes that come out of your saliva break that bread down, you will start to taste the sweetness that's in it. Mm-hmm. But it's going to take about, I don't know, maybe it's 2.5 minutes in order for it to dissolve in your mouth the way that it would.
Really?
But you will taste the sweetness associated with the flour that is the bread.
Right. So that's what's happening emotionally and in our states of mind that leads us to eat these foods. What about the feelings a person gets after emotional eating?
Oh, the guilt and the despair and the self-loathing. These two will basically push a person down the road towards making bad food choices the next time they eat. Why? Because they're trying to overcome their guilt and their self-loathing and the despair associated with having made poor food choices.
Sounds like there's a direct connection here that, you know, it's a sick cycle that you've described. In many families, food is also a reward. Is there a good way to have an emotional connection to food without it becoming a problem?
Oh, yeah, but you need to never use food as a reward. That's how you fix that problem. Uh-huh. Never reward somebody with food. Certainly don't reward somebody with crap food or candy, like Halloween that we had over a month ago. You don't want that to have happen. You know, if a kid associates sweets as a reward, it's not a reward. It's a poison. You're killing yourself. It should never be considered a reward, but that's the mentality that we've ingrained within our society, and that's one of the things that needs to change, is that sugar is not a reward for anything. Sugar is, you know, put that into the body, give it to the person as a, quote, perceived reward, you're actually punishing them. You're penalizing them. They just don't see the connection.
That's very interesting because, as if you remember, you taught me to raise my children using healthy food. I remember when they were young and they went in school, they were the only ones eating vegetables. Everybody else was eating the crap food. And now my son has done the same thing with his son. So it's generational, that's for sure. If you use food as a way of coping with emotions, it doesn't do anything to address the underlying cause, does it?
Absolutely not. And that's the problem. It's like, okay, if you're using food as a reward and or as a coping mechanism, then you're definitely not understanding the mechanism for why the person needs to cope. If you address the reason for why they're feeling that they need to reach for food as a coping mechanism, then they don't necessarily need to do that anymore. And that's ultimately what we want to give people back control of how they deal with their lives so that they're actually in control as opposed to being controlled by the unconscious, subconscious things that go on. So it's important to have the right state of mind to make the right choices so that you can continue to live in the right state of mind. So it's a repetitive cycle, but it's one that we want people to get into. So we need to take a short commercial break to hear from our generous sponsor, the Alternative Healthcare Network.com. Please listen to this commercial, and we'll be back after this break.
You are listening to the Alternative Healthcare Network.
You've been going to the doctor for years. They order you blood work, give you a pill to cover up your symptom, and send you on your way. The side effects to that medication could not only be dangerous, but life-threatening, and what you don't know can kill you. I'm Dr. Richard Huntoon of the Advanced Alternative Medicine Center. For all the latest on improving your health, I'm here to answer any questions in helping you towards a healthier life. Call Advanced Alternative Medicine Center at 561-2225 or go to spineboy.com.
You are listening to the Alternative Healthcare Network.
We are back, and you are listening to When Your Health Matters, the show designed to empower you to better health through knowledge and education. And I'm your host, Dr. Richard Huntoon from Advanced Alternative Medicine Center. We are located at 138 Canal Street in Pooler Park. That is in Pooler, Georgia. We are in Suite 404 of Building 400. So when you come into the parking lot, if you head to the left side of the parking lot, you'll be looking at five different buildings when you come in. There's two on the left, there's one in the middle, and there's two on the right. We are the second building on the left. And when you come in the front door, you're going to turn immediately to the right, and you're going to find Suite 404 in the building that is Building 400. And so that's where we're located. We'd love to have you stop in and say hello. And if you have a health issue, that's certainly the best way to get it dealt with. But if you want to kind of feel me out before you come into the office and you want to call me so that we can have a conversation, the best way to do that is to call my cell phone. My cell phone number is area code 845-561-2225. Again, 845 845- 561-2225. That is the phone that I carry with me everywhere I go. There's a 99% chance that if you call that number, I will be the one answering it. And since I'm the one who probably has the answers that you're looking for, that would be the best thing to do. And so if you do call me, I'm happy to give you the answers. But let's say you're even a little bit less willing to talk to me, but you do want to communicate with me, you can do that via email. Please don't send me a text because my phone does not receive texts. I will never answer your text, and then you'll be upset with me because I didn't get back to you. But truth be told, I don't receive texts. But if you do want to communicate to me in that form, please send me an email. I'm happy to give you my email address, which is docrick, D-O-C-R-I-C-K at spineboy.com. Again, docrick at spineboy.com. Whether you come into the office, best choice. Call me, second best choice. Email me, third best choice. Doesn't matter. Get in touch with me, and I'm happy to help you to better understanding what the concerns that you have regarding your health and get you back on the road to health. And so Marshall and I have been talking about a healing state of mind. I believe your state of mind is most important if you want to be healthy in this world. And I'm sure, Marshall, you have more questions.
I do. Doc, this has been a fascinating conversation so far about a healing state of mind. I think people might want to know, does it take more than attitude to take back control of your eating?
Well, certainly. And it starts with the right attitude to desire to change one's habits for the better. And so, yeah, you need to have the drive. You need to have the commitment. You need to have the motivation. And those are all part of your attitude. So it does start with your attitude, but nothing goes anywhere unless you apply it. So you're definitely going to need to take that positive attitude and apply it to the choices that you're making. And again, be in your outcome. If you're being in your outcome to where you're eating the right foods and you feel the way that you should feel and you imagine that feeling before you actually sit down to have something to eat, it's like every time I go into a restaurant and I grab a menu, I look at the menu and I'm like, okay, how am I going to feel if I eat? Well, there's nothing on that page that's going to make me feel good, so we're just not even going to look at that page. There's nothing on that. Wait, we go 2-3 pages into the menu. Now I start to find some things where you got the salads and that kind of stuff that I can eat those foods because I know how they're going to make me feel. I'm going to stay away from the other foods because I know how they're going to make me feel. And I choose to be in charge of how it is that I feel, and I want to feel good.
So how can folks tell the difference between, let's say, being hungry and emotional eating like we discussed before?
Well, hunger means you can eat for the sake of eating, and it doesn't have to be something specific. Now, emotional eating is where the cravings come in. You have to have this food item or you're not satisfied. And so I remember as a kid, there was a gum that they used to make called Juicy Fruit.
Right.
And I remember the first time that I had Juicy Fruit as a gum, I remember biting into it. And I was like, wow, this is awesome. I don't want to chew this. I want to eat it. I just want to swallow it. I want to embody this within me. And I remember, and parents told us and other adults told us, you never want to swallow gum because it sticks to your inside and clogs you up a little bit. And that's definitely an old wives' tale. But I do remember the taste of the Juicy Fruit when I first put it into my mouth was so exhilarating that I just wanted to swallow it and like eat more pieces of it because I wanted to feel the satisfaction of ingesting it, not just chewing it.
So you were embodying that Juicy Fruit. I remember that gum as a kid. What's going on when one feels emotional hunger?
The emotions are driving the bus, so to speak. Your emotions are basically ruling how you're looking at the world. Instead of you looking at the world objectively, you're being controlled emotionally.
I think a lot of people, though, are just automatically eating. How can they become mindful of what triggers their emotional reactions?
You actually need to pay attention, Marshall. The most important rule in life is to pay attention. And when you start to pay attention to A, how you feel, B, how you're functioning, and C, the choices that you have available to you, there's always a positive choice to be made. And sometimes the positive choice is to not eat, especially if you're in an environment that's filled with food that you probably shouldn't be eating. And that's pretty much any restaurant in the country right now, is there's always foods in there that we probably shouldn't be eating. But, you know, I have a very good friend of mine that has an organic restaurant up in the state of New York called Aroma Time Bistro. And Marcus has gone through lots of trouble to make his food 100% from scratch the way that it's supposed to be made. And people from all over the country come to his restaurant because they've heard this is where you can get high quality from scratch food. When he first decided to open a restaurant, he was a chef for a country club. And he knew how important it was to start serving healthy food. The challenge was, is as he introduced the healthy food to the club members, nobody would order it because they were used to their hamburgers and their hot dogs and their crap food. So he basically said, I can't do this for the high-end clients that I have, so I'm going to make them come to me for when they choose to actually have healthy food. And as we've become more health conscious in our society, more and more people are looking for quality restaurants in which to go to. And his is one of the best quality restaurants. It's a green restaurant. He's a certified green restaurant, which means you got to go through a whole bunch of qualifications to become a certified green restaurant. I think there's less than 50 of them in the country, and he's one of them.
Well, as you pointed out, there are probably less than 50 of those in the United States. What are some of the alternatives that folks can do to get control of their emotional responses?
Well, you need to stay on top of your emotional responses, become conscious of them, and then manage them consciously. And if they're really getting in the way of you doing the right thing, then you need to consult with somebody like me that can help separate the emotional component of the memories and the emotions that are driving the bus so that you can actually be the driver of your own bus rather than being driven in a bus that you're just simply a passenger in that's being driven by your emotions.
So what can one expect when they do start to change their attitudes?
Well, you're going to change in what you experience, and that in itself is going to help you continually change your attitude. It's a self-fulfilling prophecy. When you change your awareness and you change your choices and you change your attitude, then that's going to continue to feed the process forward in a positive direction.
And can they turn their depression around?
They can always turn their depression around. Depression is actually not something difficult to fix. If you try to do it medicinally, it's going to be very difficult because the medicine is being processed by your liver, and it creates problems in the liver, and depression is a liver imbalance. And so when you understand that, you know how to unwind it. It's actually, depression is very easy to fix.
And what about someone who is habitually angry?
Trace back where they feel no control, understand who made them feel that way and when they were a kid, and heal that dynamic between them and whoever the person was that made them feel that they had no power in their lives. Anger is an expression of loss of control of making decisions and exercising your right to make your own choice. When people can't make their own choice, they're going to get angry.
Right. So when you do something that upsets you, or when you get angry or sad, can't take your anger out on other people.
Oh, absolutely not. You need to recognize it, find a suitable outlet, and practice releasing so that you can be present with what is and not be distracted by your emotional reality while present life is passing you by. So many people do things backwards, and life is passing them by, and they don't even really participate in life. You know, you see people on their devices where they've created their own little world on their device, and they don't actually pay attention to what's going on around them.
So changing one's attitude changes one's health condition.
Always.
So what do you do for someone who's living with a condition that isn't going to go away?
You need to change your attitude about their condition. We've talked several times in the past about Christopher Reeves. You know, he was Superman, and then he had an accident as an equestrian rider, and he broke his neck.
Yeah.
And he lived as a quadriplegic in a wheelchair for a number of years before he finally succumbed to his health condition. But Christopher Reeves was an inspiration. He was a Superman in a wheelchair, and he didn't let his affliction, he didn't let his health condition influence his ability. Stephen Hawking's the same way. You know, he knew he had a condition that was going to deteriorate over time and ultimately took his life, but he contributed tremendous amounts to the science community as a result of how his mind worked, and he had a wonderful, beautiful mind, and his affliction didn't interfere with that. So you don't have to let a health condition ruin your attitude. You let your attitude control what you experience and whether not going to limit you based upon what your health condition is.
So the term cure isn't used much in healthcare anymore, Doc.
It's actually an illegal word.
Yeah, people talk about living with a condition and diseases in remission. So what is healing?
Well, healing is the resolution of a problem or your experience of that problem. And so what's important is to know that all health issues have an ability to be healed. The attitude that you bring to it is what's going to make the big difference. If you have a negative attitude with regards to what you're experiencing health-wise, by all means, pick up the phone and give me a call. Area code 845 561-2225. You can email me directly at docrick@spineboy.com. You can walk into my office at 138 Canal Street in Pooler Park, Suite 404 of Building 400. Let's have a conversation. Tell me how your life is being impacted by your health, how it affects your attitude, how it affects your relationship, maybe with a wife or maybe with a husband, maybe with your kids, maybe with your coworkers. If you have something that is bringing you down as a result of not being healthy, please come talk to me and I will help you figure out how we can get rid of it once and for all so that you can get back into the game of life. Marshall, I want to thank you for today's show. I appreciate your questions and leading the conversation. I want to ask you, the listener, thank you again for tuning in. I'm going to ask you to tune back in next week, same health time, same health station. This is Dr. Richard Huntoon from Advanced Alternative Medicine Center saying, I look forward to speaking to you when your health matters.